and Francis Davis. I'm Rachel Peterson. When and where were you guys born?
I was born in Southwest Ingalls, 6 miles, in 1921.
In a farmhouse.
Yes, in the farmhouse. The doctor come to the farmhouse then with a horse and buggy.
That's quite a time ago then, though.
Oh, yes. I'll be 82 years old here in just another couple of weeks or so.
Wow. What about you?
Well, I was born in the country, too, in the address was Burdick, B-U-R-D-I-C-K, Kansas. And I was born at home, and I was the fourth daughter of my folks.
Wow.
And I think they were hoping for a boy, but my mother said that the neighbor lady cried when I was a girl, but my mother said she never cried.
So were you the last?
No, I have a brother that was 2 years younger than I am, but he's deceased now. He was killed when he was 70 in a farm accident over by Lindsberg, Kansas.
Mm-hmm. And I'm the oldest in our family, and I have a sister that's 4 years younger than I am, Helen Grunke. And we both grew up out on the farm until we went to country school. I did. I went to country school for 7 years before we finally had the consolidation and went into Ingalls. So,
is it the same building they're going to now?
Ingalls?
Yeah, in Ingalls.
No. They've torn that building down, and there might be a little bit of it incorporated into the other, but didn't look anything like that. And so that was, I walked to school, just a mile to country school, and we seldom ever rode with anyone. Mother seldom ever come and got us unless the weather was inclement. And but at one time they did buy us a little Shetland pony with a cart, two-wheel cart, and we drove her to school. And she didn't want to go to school. You always had to fight her to get her to go to school. But boy, when you got ready to come home, we come home in a hurry.
So Lyle, your parents were farmers then, right?
Yes.
What did your parents do for a living?
My father was a Lutheran minister, Swedish Lutheran of the Augustana Synod, which has been incorporated with other Lutheran churches, so there's no Swedish Lutheran Synod anymore. And I went to school, too, to a country school, and the name of the school was the Farrar School, F-A-R-R-A-R. And I went there for my 8 years. Of course, we didn't have kindergarten then. And one of our big worries was when we would, after the eighth grade, when we would go to town and take the county exams and to see if we passed the county exams, whether we'd be eligible to go on to high school. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the big concerns of all the kids.
I bet.
And I walked to school with my sisters, older sisters, and I have three older sisters, and my parents hardly ever took us to school because they believed that the exercise was good for us, which it was. But there was one real cold day when, and it was, if we went around the section, it was 2 miles, or we could go through the section, it was just a mile. Anyway, that morning it was real cold, and we were going through the section, and I was just in the first grade, and I got so cold, and I wanted to sit down and rest. And my oldest sister, who was in the seventh grade, she wouldn't let me sit down, and she just took me by the hand and just pulled me to school. And I can remember that. Yeah, she was so very upset with me that I wanted to sit down and rest. But we kids all got along well in school. The big kids helped the younger ones, and we all played together out on the playground, and they kind of looked after us. I remember one time when we were walking home from school, and it was a real muddy place there on the road because it was a mud road. And one of the older boys, I think he was a seventh grader, no, he was an eighth grader, I believe, and he offered to carry us little girls across the mud puddle so we wouldn't get our shoes muddy. So he carried me across, and then he carried my next older sister, who was in the third grade, carried her across the mud puddle. And then when it came to my next sister, who was in the sixth grade, she absolutely wasn't going to have a boy carry her across the mud puddle, so she walked. But I like to think then that the kids got along fine and seemed like they didn't pick on the little kids. In fact, they looked after them.
We had a one-teacher school, and it had all 8 grades. Mm-hmm. And you wonder sometimes how we learned, but apparently we did, because you learn from the older ones as you hear them recite and so forth. And schoolhouse was just one of the best picturesque that you've seen around everywhere. And with pot-bellied stone inside to warm the building. And we didn't have water. You brought in a bucket of water, and then you each had a tin cup, and you could dip in and drink from that tin cup.
So this school, have they torn it down, or is that one really?
Yeah,
school?
Oh yes, the building is gone long ago.
Yeah, that's kind of sad, but...
And of course we didn't have any hot lunches then. We all carried our little dinner buckets to school, and we always had jelly or jam sandwiches, something like that. And
a lot of fried egg sandwiches.
And so I carried, back then when my folks moved to Nebraska before my senior year, they lived close enough to school so I could go home for dinner, and what a treat that was to be able to go home and not to have an old sack lunch anymore.
And I graduated from high school at Ingalls in 1939. Mm-hmm. And then went to junior college for 1 year, Dodge City. And that was about the time that World War II started, and there's so much unrest, and you felt like you would be called into the service, and I didn't finish up my education.
Mm-hmm. So what did you do?
What do you mean?
Well, you graduated, and then you went a year to junior college.
I went to work for Beach Aircraft in Wichita.
Well, you went to junior college for a year, and tell her about your job.
I wanted to work for Beach Aircraft in Wichita.
I mean, when you were going to junior college.
Well, I worked on, I forget what it was.
NYA,
National Youth Association.
It was a government program that President Roosevelt had come out, because that was during the Depression when people didn't have any jobs, and so he was on that.
I worked in the superintendent of schools office in Dodge City and made $16 a month, and I paid $8 for my rent for a place to stay, and so that left me $8 for the month.
Wow.
And to save on expenses, why, he and his roommate they would go home for the weekend. Tell about that.
Yeah, we'd go home for the weekend, and we took turns cooking. And when we went home, then our mothers would fix us up quite a good many things, you know, to use through the week.
Mm-hmm.
My roommate, and I won't mention who it was, but his mother always made macaroni. And I never got so sick of macaroni eating 5 days a week. But I finally got the place I like macaroni again.
But before that, when he was in high school, tell about that. You had you were a bus driver.
Yes, I drove an old rail bus. School bus. And picked up kids around through the area, just like buses do nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
But the bus that I had didn't have such a thing as seats in it. Had benches along each side, and then a narrow bench down through the middle.
Wow.
And so everybody sat on the outside. But the older ones looked after the younger ones, and everything went fine.
So as a bus driver, did you have to get any kind of special training?
No. If you had a license, then you were eligible if they... That was up to the school whether they'd hire you or not.
But I think most of the bus drivers were high school juniors or seniors, weren't they?
Yeah, junior and seniors usually.
And they seemed to be very reliable, and I don't think I don't know if they hardly ever had an accident. And of course, and back then, you know, when there were so many dirt roads, why, if there was a bad storm, you know, a snowstorm or rain, why then you'd have bus holidays.
Yes, that my time was during the what you call the dirty 30s. And we hadn't raised crops there for 2 or 3 years through that era.
Mm-hmm.
And when we did, I can remember many times the wind would be blowing one direction and the dirt would have the road pretty well closed. You could hardly get through.
Mm-hmm.
But if the wind changed through the day, then it might blow the dirt somewhere else and it moved. And we also had a lot of Russian thistles. It wasn't uncommon to find a road completely blocked with Russian thistles.
Really?
And they'd get out and throw them out of the way. And that happened on the highways even.
Huh. Just piles of torn up Russian thistles.
Yeah, well, they're just...
They pretty well hang together.
They were big.
They just roll along.
Oh,
you
like a tumbleweed.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's see. And, of course, sometimes when the... Now, I lived in eastern Kansas during those years, so I didn't experience what he did. But then when the dust storms were so bad, well, you called off school, didn't you, for some days?
Oh, yeah. It runs in my mind that we had 1 year. We quit a year early. I mean, a month early in the fall. And back then, when you went to grade school in the country, we only went 8 months anyway.
Mm-hmm. So you went September to April?
Mm-hmm.
But then the teacher in the one-room school, the teacher was not only the teacher, but she was the janitor, and so she had to come early and start the fire on cold days, and what else did she do? But anyway, that was, and of course she was playground supervisor too and all that, so that was different from what teachers do now.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of chores did you do as a kid?
During my time, all during the 30s, there wasn't much money at our house. And I didn't get very many toys of any kind. It would have to be more like a book. mm-hmm. or something of that sort. But back then you had orange crates to play with. And you could make various farm things. Of course, being on a farm, that was my idea of having fun, was to make little farm implements from these orange crates.
They were made out of wood. Mm-hmm. The orange crates were, of course, now they don't make anything out of wood, right. You know.
And there was no such thing as TV, of course. And radio, our first radio at home was an Atwater Kent. Atwater Kent. Huh. And it was a 6-volt. So consequently, you didn't play it all the time. Mm-hmm. You'd run your battery down. So we'd play it a while of an evening, usually, or maybe get the news. And we used to listen to Amos and Andy and what was Armstrong? What was?
I can't think of his name.
I can't remember that.
But anyway, that was, his folks were progressive, and they got a light system. Tell about your light system.
Yeah, all the time when I was home, we had nothing more than just kerosene lamps mm-hmm. to use, and then about the time I left, they bought a generator and generated juice, electricity for the house. And most of those were 32 volt. Some of them were 110. And then it was about 1948 before my folks ever had REA.
Rural Electrification Administration. And where I lived in northeastern Kansas too, the church and parsonage, they had motors that would supply the electricity for big batteries that were stored there. And so anyway, that was one of the preacher's jobs, was to keep those motors going so that there'd be a store up the electricity in the batteries, so there would be lights in the church and parsonage. But I can't remember exactly when REA came, but that was wonderful to have REA, because that was only 32 volts on that system, and you couldn't get hardly any appliances. I don't know if you could get irons or not, and things like that. We would heat irons on the stove. We could do that, or we had a gasoline-powered iron. Put gasoline in it, and you pump it up and light it, and gasoline iron.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about what we did. Recreation, of course, was church. My folks were Christians, and we had what we call a 4-point. Charge, and the preacher went to these four different towns, and it would be the preacher once a month, and sometimes they come out on the evenings. Well, we always had church Sunday evenings as well as Sunday morning, and that was when we did a lot of visiting. Even the parents would have others come to their house, or we'd go to their homes, or the kids would go with some other kids, play with them on Sunday afternoon, and your folks would pick you up at night. So that was part of my recreation. It was always a good, back in the summertime, there was always a good baseball game to go to. It would probably be out in someone's cow pasture, but that's where we played. And that was a way of passing the time, you know. Uh-huh. During the 30s, hardly any of the younger people had a car. once in a great while one did, but most of us didn't have a car. I was out of high school like almost 2 years before I ever owned a car.
Well, one of the fun things you did was when you went watermelon swiping.
That's a different story, yeah.
I think I'd like to hear it.
Well, there's a couple lived out south of Ingalls, and they hadn't been married too long, and they had a big watermelon patch. And one of my other men friends was going with some girl, and so he fixed me up with him, with what do you call it? What kind of a date?
Blind date.
Blind date. And he said, "Bro, have some fun." And he said, "All we'll do is," he said, and he'd already made it. My friend had already made arrangements with this couple that would bring the girls out and get into the watermelon patch, and they would come out yelling and shooting their guns. Well, that's what happened. We got out into the watermelon patch, and boy, they began to yell and shot the gun off and one thing and another, and everybody hightailed it to the car. You wouldn't do things like that, would you?
Me? No, never.
Well, one of the things that the boys did was take some newcomer or somebody kind of green, what was it, snipe hunting?
Yeah.
Snipe hunting.
Have you heard of that?
Yes. Yes. Somebody tried to take me snipe hunting once.
No kidding. Like, that was mean, wasn't it?
It's still kind of funny, but, you know.
Well, you didn't, during the Dirty 30s, why those big clouds of dust would just come in all of a sudden, and there was this one Easter Sunday that was Black Sunday, and of course, I lived in eastern Kansas, northeastern Kansas, and even there it was dusty, but not like it was out here. But tell about you and your sister then.
My sister was in the outhouse, in that clubbing. And she was at the outhouse when that rolled in, and you could see it roll from miles ahead of it, and it would hit, and it was so black that my dad knew that she couldn't find her way back to the house, and so he went out and called to her and brought her in, and when you got into the house you couldn't see the windows, it was that black. And there was nothing to come up or end up on a morning, wake up in the morning with a layer of dust, maybe 1/16 of an inch thick or maybe even thicker on top of your quilt.
That's a lot of dust.
It's a lot of dust. And of course, through the years now, older ones have had bronchial problems, you know, and so forth. And I think it had something to do with it.
Well, they would die from, some people died from dust pneumonia, didn't they, back then?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but I lived in eastern Kansas, northeastern Kansas, and it wasn't as bad as it was out here in this part of the country. But then the farmers weren't raising hardly any crops, and they would lose their land because they couldn't make the payments, and it was a very sad time.
Before we got into the Dirty 30s, my folks raised wheat, and you cut it with a header.
A header?
Uh-huh, a header.
What's that?
And sometimes you shocked it and then put it through a thrasher machine, or sometimes the header would, you had a header with a big belt on it, and it would all grade up into a wagon. Mm-hmm. And then when you went to the house or somewhere, you'd unload that, and everything was done by hand, and pile it in a great big pile. And then the thrasher machine would come along and thrash it. And same way with corn. You hand shucked the corn at that time. You just went out and you had a hook on your hand, what you had. And you'd pull that open, pull the ear open, pull the ear out of it and throw it in the wagon. When you got your wagon full, you could take it into the house and dump it in Rick's room. And then the thrash machine would come along and thrash it. Hmm. And the corn cobs was a good way to have a good hot fire. And everyone had a cook stove. Was a big range. Most of them had a reservoir on the end for water. And that was my job after I got home from school always, was to fill that reservoir back full of water and bring in several bushel baskets full of corn cobs. And those corn cobs are hot and burn quickly, you know, so it took a lot of them. But that's what the women cooked with.
Hmm. That's interesting. I've never heard of that.
And heard of corn cobs?
Well, I know what corn cobs are, but I hadn't heard of them burning them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And, of course, they start fire easily, too, so they're easy to get a good fire burning. But then his mother kept a little can of kerosene behind the stove to pour on the cobs to get it going faster. And when he was a baby, well, just crawling around, how old were you?
I don't know. I don't.
He wasn't very old, but anyway, he got into that kerosene and drank it. And and his mother would tell how horrified she was. She thought for sure he was going to die. Took him to the doctor, and anyway, well, the doctor got him to throw up, and in a way, well, it saved his life, but anyway.
That's terrible.
Oh. Now, all this stuff I noticed we're telling you, we're in kind of a hot pot sort of way, and you'll have to sort it out.
This is fine.
Put it in the...
This is fine. What did you do for fun when you were younger?
Well, I had three older sisters, and always in the summertime we went and took piano lessons. We'd just have piano lessons in the summertime. That was one thing that we did. But we would play croquet.
Croquet.
And we played croquet and more croquet. That was the thing that we did the most of. And we enjoyed that.
I took piano lessons, but I didn't. I was not very proficient at it and didn't follow through on it. But I like to sing. And I took some voice lessons at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never kept track. I wish I had of. But I don't have any idea how many funerals that I have sung for.
And weddings.
Through the years. And weddings and that sort of thing.
Yeah. He has he still has, but his voice is husky now. He doesn't sing that much anymore. But he had a high tenor voice, and everybody enjoyed hearing him sing. And he sang in several quartets through the years because they always needed a high tenor, you know. And that was what he sang.
Bet you have a beautiful voice.
I'll leave that up to somebody else. But I did.
But he had many requests in a way to sing.
Mm-hmm. There was one at one time. I used to be the Standard Oil bulk distributor for this area.
Mm-hmm.
And we had three funerals a year in 1 week.
Mm-hmm.
And the mortician said, if you will just come, we'll put you a robe, put you on a robe,
just sing.
And you don't have to clean up or anything. I sang at three funerals that particular week.
But anyway, he said, well, he said that we can just have a choir robe to have you put on, and you can stand behind the flowers. So anyway.
So you were an oil distributor.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Bulk fuels, not necessarily oil, mm-hmm. but bulk fuels to the farmers, see? delivered fuel around to the area to the farmers.
So when was that? When did you do that? From
From about 1949 till 1976, I sold out and retired.
And then, what year was it your father died?
1958.
So, but anyway, he took over the farming operations.
And we had 800 acres of irrigated ground.
Wow. So, but that was a lot of work.
It was.
But he had a farmhand that helped him, so that helped.
Yeah, we used to, the oil business today is altogether different than it was then. So many of them today, it followed the fuel into the bulk plant, and then we hauled it out in trucks. We had three trucks that we used at one time, traveled around through the country, filled tanks.
But your fuel also came in by rail at that time. Some of it did.
Some of it did. And that was something else. That was, you had to move tank cars and to get them in the right position to pump them off. But that didn't last too many years. So it was all transport. Mm-hmm.
One of the big deals was that his boss lived in Garden City. He was the
he was the area salesman.
So anyway, but they had this contest that all the fellas sold 100 barrels of oil. Well, then they'd have this special dinner program for them. So that was quite an honor if you got in the 100 barrel club.
And we sold 100 barrels of oil, several times. As far as that's concerned.
So when did you two meet?
Well, I came out, I was a school teacher. Uh-huh. And my first year I taught school at the little town of Logan up in northwestern Kansas. Mm-hmm. It's west of Phillipsburg. And I enjoyed teaching there, but the town was 20 miles from Phillipsburg, and all there was a mud road, and when it rained, you couldn't even get out. And so I decided that it would be to my advantage to get in a town where you at least could get out. And so then I came to Ingalls as a school teacher, and I taught home ec, and well, my major was mathematics. So I taught both mathematics and home ec in Ingalls. Mm-hmm. And then that was where I met him. All the local boys, you know, they're always out after the school teachers.
I caught you on the rebound, that's a...
So you were a school teacher. Where did you go to school?
Well, I went to country school in northeastern Kansas, where we lived. And then I went to a little junior college in Wahoo, Nebraska. It was a...
W-A-H-O-O, Wahoo?
Mm-hmm. It was a little Lutheran school, junior college. And they consolidated with another college when the Augustana Lutherans did their merging. And so then I finished at Bethany College in Lindsberg. Mm-hmm. See, my grandfather, on my father's side, he had homesteaded land close to Lindsberg. And so all the good Swedes, they want to move back to Lindsberg. So anyway, when my folks retired, they moved back to Lindsberg. Mm-hmm. And my mother's folks, they homesteaded land outside of Hutchinson, and to pay for the land, while my grandfather worked in the salt mines in around Hutchinson.
Really? Mm-hmm. I didn't No, there were salt mines. I guess I don't know a lot, but...
Oh, yeah, that's Hutchinson is... what do they call Hutchinson? It's...
salt capital of the world.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Carry salt and several of those. There's just salt everywhere down in that part of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been married for 54 years this coming this summer.
She has, or you two have?
Both of us.
I figured.
Yeah, it's been a long time. I guess it depends upon which way you look. When you look forward, you think 54 years sounds like a long time. But looking back, why, it's gone pretty fast.
And we have three children. We have two boys and a girl. The girl's the oldest, and she's a CPA in Dallas. And Kevin is a CPA and owns his own business in rural Castle Rock. And Douglas is the youngest, and he works for Boeing. He's a liaison engineer, and he's had some interesting experiences in recent years. He's been to China and to England three times, and all of the
Arizona
United States
and
various
Texas
places.
And
our kids all graduated from Kansas University.
So well, they all graduated from Cimarron High School, mm-hmm. and then they graduated from KU.
And they all have their masters.
Wow. So let's backing up a little bit to the Dirty 30s. Do you remember Jackrabbit Drives?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Back at that, during those times in the Dirty 30s, jackrabbits, if you could get anything to grow at all, would maybe just go in and dig it up to have something to eat. So when they formed these jackrabbit drives, they would specify usually a section of land, and out in the middle they would build a pen, and everybody walked in from the outside towards the middle, and you eventually forced them into these pens.
And they weren't allowed any guns or firearms.
Yeah, never guns because it's too many people. And they would club them to death after they got them in there. I've seen them 2 feet deep or better, and there'd just be so many of them.
What did you do with them?
There was usually somebody that would like to use them for pets, food, and that sort of thing. They make it into.
It's a lot of pet food.
I don't remember now.
But you would have several hundred?
Oh yeah. Yeah, there would be several hundred rabbits, and I expect you had probably. At lots of times, 100 to maybe 200 number of people scattered around the section to walk in. But you could have them farther out on the outside, so the rabbit, he wants to get away, so you run this direction. Then as you get in closer, well, you're closer too, you see, and you finally just pin them down.
Yes, but some of the rabbits would get away that way too, wouldn't they?
No, not usually. There weren't very many of them.
But that was before I came out this country. But anyway, I was an observer at one of the rabbit hunts, and that was, I think, 1956 when Pam was a baby. You still had them then. Right?
Yeah. What else do you think about?
Oh, well, then I think about.
No, I meant her, Rachel.
Well, I've heard about grasshopper plagues. Were they here during that time, or Was that someplace else?
I wouldn't say that they were a plague, but yes, I've seen the grasshoppers come in and maybe pretty well strip a field of cane or something of this sort, and just eat the leaves and leave that rib along the down through the middle. But that didn't happen very often, and I've heard about those plagues, but I would never say we had those guys.
Okay. Do you remember hearing about Pearl Harbor?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Where were you when you first heard about it? Do you remember?
Well, I was living at home in northeastern Kansas, and I heard it on the radio. And that was really a big thing. And my father, being a Lutheran minister, he had been so, of course, they all were afraid that we were going to be, enticed into the war, you know, because that was when over in Europe, you know, Hitler was on the rage then, you know, but anyway, my father knew then that with Pearl Harbor that we would, that President Roosevelt would declare war, which he did.
And I was
got involved
for,
in that.
I was working for Beach Aircraft by that time when I heard it.
And of course, those were scary years, you know, because we kept reading about what of those little countries that Hitler had taken over and everything, and it was a scary time. And then, of course, the boys were all going off to war, either in the Army or in the Navy, and
I was never in the service. I was working for Beach, and when I was called up, I had a bad knee, and they give you what you call a 4F. But they made sure that I went back to work for Beach to help build airplanes. But I wasn't ever in the service. Mm-hmm. Per se.
Of course, during the war years then, after we got into the war, there were a lot of things that were scarce, and so we had lots of things that were rationed, mm-hmm. and you had to get your ration cards, and some of the things that were rationed were sugar, and for the women that canned, you had to get a special allotment for that if you were going to can, and shoes, you could only have so many pairs of shoes. Gasoline, tires, what else, Lyle?
Well, there were a lot of other things as far as that's concerned.
But those were some of the main things. So you didn't travel very far because, of course, as the war went on, your tires got thinner and thinner, and you didn't dare go too far because you didn't know if you'd have a blowout or not. But gasoline was rationed, and clothing. I like to sew, and you'd go into the store, and you couldn't find hardly any material at all. Or if some you found, what you'd find maybe be satin or taffeta or something, you know, that wouldn't be too practical to sew for a everyday dress or for a regular dress. Uh-huh. And then elastic was one thing that got, and so they were making, finally got to the place where they were making women's panties without elastic, and they had a little button on the side. So that was one of the sacrifices we made. Huh. But when I was teaching my first year of school,
silk stockings either.
Yeah, and of course silk. We weren't getting silk because that comes from Japan, and so then they came out with nylon stockings, and that was the big thing then. Nylon stockings that they came out with, and some of the first nylon stockings, they would have cotton tops to conserve on the nylon. And but anyway, we were always all were pleased, and of course even they were so hard to get. You'd put your name down on a list to get them, and if you had a good pair of stockings, why, you'd save those just for special occasions. You didn't wear them every day. And the first year I taught school at Logan, I taught home ec, and when we were going to make cotton dresses, why, the girls went down to the elevator and got new feed sacks to make the dresses out of.
Really?
And they were making the feed sacks, and they would make it out of very colorful material, mm-hmm. with nice prints. And so then when the farmer went to get his feed, why, he had wanted to get the feed sacks, you know, that matched up so his wife could make dresses out of them. But anyway, they could buy new feed sacks, and that's what the girls did. And I remember making dresses for my mother out of feed sacks. Took two feed sacks, she's just a little gal. I could make her a nice cotton dress out of two feed sacks. And but they used feed sacks for a lot of things. They even used them like for the backs of quilts and things like that.
Hmm.
But it was good material. It was, it was kind of a coarse material, but it wore well and lasted, and they had some real pretty prints. And so a lot of the women wore feed sack dresses, and they were proud of them. Your mother did too, didn't she?
Yeah.
See, I've always envisioned feed sack dresses as being, or feed sack as being burlap, or that plain white.
Think about burlap or something.
Yeah.
Something of this sort.
And no, my father had gotten one feed sack. It had printed on it an apron, and then it had a design that you could embroider. So it was a white one, and so I made that up for my mother, and I embroidered it, and it. I still have it. I'll show it to you after you get through.
Okay.
Remind me.
I'll
but,
do that.
That was quite nice.
Mm-hmm.
So you know how old that is.
That's
60 years old?
At least.
What?
I said that apron would be 60 years old. Maybe more. Because I made it from mother when I was a girl. And
probably more.
65. But anyway, of course, back then, the women all wore aprons to protect their dresses.
Mm-hmm.
And an apron was quite a useful piece of clothing.
Mm-hmm.
Like you go out into the garden, you gather a few things, and you could put them in your apron and make a pocket out of your apron and carry them to the house. Or go out to the hen house and you could pick up some of the eggs and put them in your apron. Or when you're out, if some of the cattle got out, then you could, the women could go out and flap their apron up and down and scare the cattle, get them back in. But anyway, an apron had a lot of useful purposes.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember hearing about the war being over? I mean, when did you first hear that the war was over? Do you remember that?
I can't tell you where it was, but yes, it was over the radio. Mm-hmm. When I heard that they did.
I don't know which one, war in Europe or with Asia with the Japanese. But anyway,
well, it was the one we declared war, you see, on Japan, and that was the one that President Roosevelt made that announcement.
But it was interesting because when I went to Bethany College, finished up my last 2 years of college there, some of the boys that had been in college there when my oldest sister had been there, let's see, 6 years before, some of those boys had been in the service, and then they were had come back to finish their degrees, and so some of the boys that knew her, why, I was in college with them, and some of them were some of my good friends.
Mm-hmm. That's about all I have. Is there any other stories that you can think of that you'd like to tell?
I'll go get my story, and you can. I'll probably, there'll be some things in there that.
All right.
You can just put those in, and I guess.
Yeah.
And what? Are you junior, senior?
I will be a sophomore in college this fall.
Oh, you will.
Where are you going to school?
I'm going to Tabor College.
Are you? Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh shoot! What was I going to say? Well, my sister one time made some made up a story about the Depression, but you know, back when I can't remember that it was that big a deal. My folks had a big garden. They had my father as a minister, even had a couple, three cows and chickens, and we always had plenty to eat, and
that's the way we always had sufficient to eat.
Mm-hmm.
You've heard stories about those people that didn't, but that wasn't the norm through this area.
Mm-hmm. Well, it wasn't, but of course there were people that did have hard times and didn't have enough to eat. But my folks were, well, let's say, very, you know, not inventive, but what would be the right word? Conservative, or, I mean, they made use, you know, and were able to, you know, do what they could to have a good living.
Another thing, we didn't have a closet full of clothes.
Mm-hmm.
You had the men had one good pair of overalls, and that's what you usually wore to church and places like that.
Well, my mother, when we were little, my mother made most of our clothes, and then I wasn't very old until I got started sewing my own clothes, and I was quite proud of that fact. And but we didn't have a lot of clothes either.
Well, where'd you even say you went to school?
Tabor College.
Oh, Tabor. Okay.
Yeah, I graduated from the high school here, and I'm going to Tabor mm-hmm. College.
You had quite a bunch of kids going that are going and have gone to Tabor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just. I'll go down and get one of those.
Yes, and I'll turn this thing off. Thank you very much for talking to me.
Well, I hope. I know it's been kind of a hodgepodge thing.
It's great.
You'll have to put it together the way it should be. But anyway, it's don't step. Oh, we had a good bringing up, and we didn't have all the things, you know, that kids have now, but they have so many more temptations. Now when kids go to town, you go to Walmart, and they have all these wonderful things to buy, and
mm-hmm.
things that they need, they think. And back when I was little, well, we didn't have all those, the stores didn't have all those things in them, and so we didn't know what we're missing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yes, well, thank you.
You're very welcome.